And those same persons, when they become devotees, it works the other way around. Opportunities for sense enjoyment approach one. And as Prabhupada dramatically said, they come rolling at your feet. Please enjoy me. Please enjoy me. In other words, temptations for sense gratification. But the devotee, Prabhupada said, turns his head and looks the other way. Please don't bother me. Please go away. All I want is Krishna. And it's true, it happens like that. But when one becomes very mature and deeply absorbed in a mood of devotion, it's no longer like we were discussing this dhira out of disgust, please go away. It just shrivels up and becomes insignificant. Just has absolutely no meaning, no value, no nothing. Although there's the like this example of seeing the fire in wood, or seeing the Supreme Lord in the cosmic manifestation, which is the effect coming from the cause. The Supreme Lord is there. So there may be respect for that feature of the material energy, which is but an extension of the Supreme Lord, but doesn't have the same rasa as direct exchange with the Supreme Lord. So I may engage these things in Krishna's service, but it's not this particular object and its very nice configuration and how nicely it's carved, and that makes my life happy because I have one that looks like this instead of one that's something else. So now I have a very cultured way of putting my book on the table instead of on the table. So in other words, it's not out of sense gratification, but in a mood of respecting the Srimad Bhagavatam, something nice for the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we use Krishna's energy for that purpose because here's Krishna. It's a whole other consciousness. Through the medium of devotional service. Now, one other thing, keeping my eye on the time here, but something else that's mentioned in this verse, in the previous verse, is there are these 10 processes of liberation. And in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada mentions some processes of liberation that are discussed in the previous canto, in the 6th canto. He refers to the verse Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham Dunvanti Karchneya Niharam Iva Bhaskara. This verse Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana, it follows, it's spoken by Shukadeva Goswami in response to a question by Maharaj Parikshit, where Maharaj Parikshit is asking, how can one go beyond the binding force and the contaminating force of reactions to one's material activities? How can one achieve liberation? Or, but he doesn't say it, how can one achieve liberation, but that's what he wants to hear. So just review that a little bit, at least the part that's relevant for what Prahlad is saying. So, there are three responses that Shukadeva gives. The first two of those responses, surprisingly, Maharaj Parikshit says that's wrong, or there's something more than that. Please go beyond that. So the first response, how can one not experience the reactions to one's past sins? So the first answer that Shukadeva gives is atonement. There are processes in the Dharma Shastras, Manu Samhita, etc., where one can counteract one's sins by atonement process, prayaschitta. Just block it out. Cover it. Like children play the game, right? The one that's got their hand in the top and the end wins. Forget what the game goes back. Anyway, so Maharaj Parikshit says, wait a minute. I was just king. And I saw, while I was king, that persons who were criminals would get apprehended, put in jail, and serve their sentence, and they should have been cleared of that reaction. But when they were released again, they went out and committed the crime, many of them. So that's not sufficient. Counteracting the crime with some atonement for that crime. Counteracting sin by atonement, prayaschitta for that sin. The problem is, tendency for sin will remain. And he gives the example of the elephant that takes his bath and then goes to and throws dust all over him after taking bath. And Shukadeva Goswami appreciates his answer. You've listened very, very well to the previous five cantos. Now I can understand that you've heard correctly, because it's true. What you say is true. That fruitive activity, counteracting fruitive activity, leaves one in the realm of fruitive activity. And you should know that Dharma Shastras, they're huge. Manu Samhita, you ever see a copy of Manu Samhita? It's huge. And all of those scriptures that give the duties of mankind, it's vast. Just like in this list of 10 things for achieving liberation. Varnashram Dharma. Proper conduct. And taking and responsibilities in case there's any deviation in that conduct. And so on. So, the second answer that Shukadeva Goswami gives is, therefore this method of neutralizing one's mistakes must be complemented by knowledge of the absolute truth, by study of the Vedas, which is another, it's two of the ten, actually. To amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge is one. To study the Vedas and other Vedic literatures, there's very similar. So, that's the second one that he proposes. And then he says that along with those procedures of to free your capacity for study of the absolute truth, so that you can actually do that and not be spaced out, not be your mind all over the place, there are purifying activities that one must undergo. And he gives a similar list, not identical list, but some of them are identical. Tapasya brahmacharjena, samena cha, dhamena cha. Someone knows this verse? Tyagena, go ahead. Tyagena. Very good. So that's a list of, the way that Prabhupada describes it in the purport, these are activities that a jnani will take up in order to qualify to be absorbed in knowledge of Brahma-jnana. One can't be a realized Brahma-jnani without tapasya, brahmacharjena, samena cha, dhamena cha, tyagena, satya, shocha, bhyam, yamena, niyamena va. They're helpers, but they're actually imperative. You must have them. Otherwise, you can't be in a position where you can absorb your intelligence in understanding Brahman. Now, devotees will also observe many of those things also. But there's two things. One is that Shukadeva Goswami then says, however, there's a problem. Still there's a problem, because even one who has, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, even a person who is intelligence is fixed, they may still find some deviant behavior. Even a person of discrimination. I know I should do this, and I shouldn't do that. Sometimes we'll find such people will do that and not do this. It happens. Krishna says right in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, how does that happen? Even against one's own determination, against one's own will, something will happen. How does it happen? It's contact with the modes of nature. Kamisha, Krodisha, Rajoguna, Samudbhava. When the soul comes in contact with the mode of passion, anything can happen. But to speak of the mode of ignorance. So as long as there's contact with the modes of nature, just counteracting those things, because that's what this is the idea of liberation, counteracting. Tapasya, don't speak. Hold it, keep that monster in a cage. Distance yourself a little bit. Don't get too close to the cage. But the monster is still there. And sometimes the cage door opens and you get jumped on by the monster, the modes of nature. And that activity comes out. So therefore, the third answer Shukadeva Goswami gives is this kechit kevalaya. Kevalaya. Kevalaya is a very popular word amongst monists. Kevala. The absolute. Kevala dvaita. That's the philosophy of Shankaracharya. Absolute monism. Here's kevala bhakti. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya. Vasudeva parayana. That's the third answer that Shukadeva Goswami gives. That's the stage of ultimate liberation. That's actually what Maharaj Pariksit wanted to hear about. Beyond the stage of liberation as a way of counteracting the bad effects of the modes of nature and contact with matter and the mood of enjoyment, it's only possible when the awakened state of joyfulness, which Prahlad has already described, awakens. The positive joyfulness of contact with the Supreme Lord in loving devotion, then it's possible. So he's saying these processes, they may be, some other people may like to do them, but what I want to do is that process which engages not only myself, but everyone in that process, in contacting the supreme happiness of life. I mean, this message is ecstatic. It's the philosophical content that's behind the ecstasy of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. It's through these joyful processes that one simultaneously, the fullness of knowledge, just like this example that Prahlad gives of the presence of fire in wood, which we cannot perceive, but we can know it, and we can know it through the medium of devotional service, that Krishna, similarly the subtle cause of everything, is within everything. We can realize that through the medium of engaging everything in Krishna's service and realizing Krishna's presence in that everything, through the medium of devotional service. And while, so we're not only getting knowledge, which we don't have to break our head against a rock through hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes of study, just through the joyful process of devotional service. We get the same knowledge, perfectly realized, in a very joyful process that also simultaneously protects us from what Prahlad is warning us about, this maya sukaya bharam udvahato vimudhan, this civilization that's just filled with a promise of happiness that's nothing but cheating. Maya sukha. False promise of happiness that never happens. And the donkey-like persons keep chasing after the carrot, step by step. I know it's going to happen. Just take another step. And then I'm old and it's already over and they realize, wait a minute, it never happened. I guess I'm a donkey after all. So Prahlada's pleading, we're echoing Prahlada's plea. Don't make that mistake. Hear this message very carefully. Find that happiness. It's already there. It's not that the carrot is somewhere outside. It's the real, the joy, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, real happiness is within. And one just needs to, like striking the match, bring it out. Bring the fire of devotion into play in your life by striking the match through this very joyful process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hearing Krishna's wonderful message and, of course, taking Krishna prasadam. Prabhupada has taught it's a very, very simple process. Four things. Chanting and dancing. Feasting and philosophy. There you have it. Process of devotional service. Chanting and dancing. Is it difficult? It's not so difficult. There's many, many, many more difficult things that everybody in this room does daily than chanting. We do many difficult things every day. Chanting and dancing. Feasting. And discussing this nice philosophy. If one engages in hearing this very attentively, very carefully, it's so soothing to the heart. It makes things so clear. Very, very simple process. Prahlada is offering it on a golden platter. Of course, he's speaking to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but one can imagine what ecstasy Prahlada is in as he's offering these prayers. As we reviewed, by the touch of the hand of Lord Nrisimhadeva, he's filled with Brahmagyan, and he's speaking such eloquent words to elucidate the process of devotional service so nicely. And he wants to engage everyone in that process. He doesn't just want his own liberation. He doesn't want to go back to Godhead without taking others with him. Everyone. That's the heart of Prahlada. We should have such a friend as Prahlada Maharaj. Okay, so I'm going to end. But be sure you come tomorrow evening for the story of Narottam Das Thakur's disciple. The sequel to Prahlada Maharaj. So, any discussion?
Yeah. Prahlada Maharaj is telling about Maya Sukhaya.
You have something to? Here's a half-raised hand. Okay, we'll come back to you. Go ahead.
Prahlada Maharaj is referring to Maya Sukhaya.
Yeah.
In this age, it is clearly visible. The technological advancement, everything is clearly visible how this is going on.
How which is going on? Maya Sukhaya civilization. Okay.
But he's referring in Satyuga. How is that at that time?
So the question, the very soft-spoken question up front here was, that in our present age, it's very easy to see through the advancements of technology and so many things how rapid deterioration of the quality of life, the character of people is taking place. But how is it the same in Kali Yuga? They didn't have all of that modern stuff. They had something else. So how is Prahlada able to see this? When an individual is, when a soul is purified, then deviations from that pure state become very noticeable. A white sheep with a spot. And an intelligent person like Prahlada can understand that one spot means very soon many spots. And those many spots means very soon all spotty. Very soon means completely covered. And it's the principle of sense gratification was not absent totally in Satyayuga. Although primarily persons were engaged in self-realization. But we obviously, this is in Satyayuga, the school friends of Prahlad, they weren't, unless they heard from Prahlad. As soon as they heard from Prahlad, oh yeah, that makes sense. Let's do what Prahlad says. But otherwise it was Sanda and Amarika and Shukracharya and something else. So according to association, there was, where there is demoniac association or asurak association, then conduct will be like that too in Satyayuga. Look at the name, Hiranyakashipu. There was sense gratification in his life. Just the meaning of his name. Gold and soft bed. Hiranyakashipu. Sense pleasures and wealth in order to fulfill those sense pleasures. It's also in Satyayuga. The form that it takes in different yugas may be different, but the principle is still found. Now it's much more gross, pervasive. Huh?
Not very important.
Okay. Yes.
So, what is the difference between Yogamaya, Mahamaya, and internal potential of Lord Krishna?
Okay. Yogamaya and the internal potency are the same. Mahamaya is the external potency of the Lord. Now, Yogamaya sometimes will act within the pastimes of Krishna to conceal Krishna's identity from his devotee. Even sometimes, so like when Mother Yashoda looked in the mouth of Lord Krishna to see if he'd been eating dirt. And when she, after what she saw, Krishna covered her then with Yogamaya potency so she wouldn't reach the conclusion that this isn't just my son, this is the personality of Godhead. Krishna covered her with his Yogamaya potency, for example. Another very, very nice example is after Krishna went to Mathura, and before the very eyes of Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna and Balaram discombobulated the two wrestlers, Chandra and Mushtika, and then Krishna, that's such a nice description. Krishna, while even before fighting Chandra and Mushtika, he kept glancing at Kamsa out of the side of his eyes, the sidelong glance. And Shukadeva Goswami describes just like a young boy will lustfully look at a young girl out of the side of, you know, give her a glance. But he was so eager to finish him off. After taking care of Chanu and Mushtika, he jumped up on the dais and grabbed Kamsa and pow. And then just so that the people would, because he was the terror of everyone, so just so that they would know that he was dead, Krishna grabbed him by the hair and dragged him across the dais all around the floor. He's dead. He dropped him. And then Balaram went over to Vasudeva and Devaki. And as he approached Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna and Balaram were in the mood of Vatsalya. I mean, they were like the children, the mood of the children looking for parental affection. But Vasudeva and Devaki couldn't exhibit parental affection. They were just... after what they had just seen. He's so powerful that he's just finished off Kamsa. He's the personality of Godhead. So Krishna then covered Vasudeva and Devaki with his Yogamaya potency. Once covered by the Yogamaya potency, They embraced Krishna and Balaram and smelled their heads and put them on their lap and treated them like their children. Through the medium of Yogamaya potency, they could not see that they were the Supreme Lord. So the Yogamaya potency, in that sense, enhances the pastimes of Krishna. But we also find the word Yogamaya used in Bhagavad Gita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. You know that verse? You'll learn that verse. You can learn it tonight. Naham prakasha. Prakash, manifest. Na, aham, prakasha, sarvasya, yogamaya, samavritaha. Krishna says, I'm not manifest, na prakash, to those who are foolish and unintelligent, but I conceal myself by my yogamaya potency. So that's another term, another usage of the term yogamaya. In that sense, our acharyas explain. it's actually the covering potency, as Prabhupada puts it, the potency, just like electricity, it's one energy. But according to the electrician, he can make that one energy make something hot, same energy, make something cold, depending upon how the electrician uses the electricity. The electricity is one energy. So this, how Krishna's energy works, depends upon, just like how electricity works, depends upon the device, what do you call it? The apparatus that is driven by the electricity. Depends on the recipient that receives the electricity. According to our disposition towards Krishna, we will experience either his internal potency or his external potency. We'll be allowed to enter into his confidential association through the medium of devotional service if we are positively or favorably disposed towards Krishna. And then the opposite. If we are inimical or averse towards Krishna, raga, dvesha, samutena, dvandva, mohena, bharata. Now we get the mahamaya stuff. Like maya, sukhaya. We want happiness. A devotee wants happiness. And a non-devotee wants happiness. But the non-devotee is not devoted to the Supreme, so they get maya, sukha. And the devotee gets Brahma Sukha, spiritual happiness, is how we are disposed towards the Supreme, or averse to the Supreme, enjoying independently from the Supreme. Because happiness is the nature of the soul. We want that natural condition to manifest itself eternally, without limit. We all want that. Everybody wants it, without exception. Everybody wants happiness without limit. So, inherently we're incomplete because we're very tiny. So we need to find that happiness somewhere in relationship with something. So that those who are immaterial consciousness or materialistic in their inclinations want that happiness in matter apart from God. And this spiritual search for happiness is searching for that happiness in relation to God.
Is that those who are seeking happiness in material things, their happiness is temporary because that is the manifestation.
And illusory.
And illusory.
Because they're getting kicked in the shins while they're calling it happiness. Ow! Yeah, this is happy. in other words, there's concomitant suffering with that happiness. And then that happiness that they're so eager for, it's gone. And it's painful to see that. the very thing that their whole happiness is resting upon is broken. They're smashed. Yeah, it's definitely temporary. But it's also filled with suffering, even the happiness. There's painful condition of life along with that. That's not wanted, but it's rationalized. That's part of life. You have to take the bad with the good. That's life.
Krishna has no more interest in self-gratification.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that only one who has given up the self-gratification can get the taste of the love of Krishna. So how to resolve this?
They progress in parallel tracks. It's not an either or. It's a progression. To the degree that one than the other. Does that satisfy your question?
But while doing this, one of the
sense
is done, then the bhakti will be destroyed.
Well, it's not that bhakti is destroyed. Bhakti may be covered. So we're in the transit lounge. You know what that is? The transit lounge? You ever fly in an airplane? So you get your boarding pass, then you go in the transit lounge. Try to leave the transit lounge, see what happens. They won't let you leave. Try to get on the plane. You can't get on the plane. You're in the transit lounge. Especially these days, security in India is unbelievable. They do your bag search twice. They do your body search twice. They do, to get on that plane, you got to be clean. Unbelievable. But I go through like this, the guys that do the thing, they look at me and say, basically their eyes are saying, this is my job, what can I do, please forgive me, and do the frisk. See if I'm carrying any weapon or something. Anyway, we're in the transit stage. We're attempting to let go of the entangling circumstances of complex material life, and we're trying to go to the destination, Goloka. We're on the Goloka, we're trying to board the Goloka Express, and we're in the transit lounge. We've got our boarding pass and our passport and our visa. But we're still not there yet. So we may get nervous and thinking, wait a minute, I don't know if I want to go there. Maybe I better go back and see my girlfriend, or go watch a movie I didn't see yet, or do something before I get on the Goloka Express. So it's not that our devotion will be lost if we get cold feet or if we're in the stage of unsteady bhakti, anishtita bhakti. Most likely we'll all be in the stage of anishtita bhakti for some time, until the impurities of heart can be removed and the strength of our bhakti can be matured. We're in the same transit lounge. There's many others besides those of us here. And therefore we have to use our intelligence and very carefully consider, okay, how do I get from the transit lounge to the Goloka Express? I have to be patient. I have to wait till they call for boarding. But I also have to prepare myself. Somebody might say, all aboard, and we get to the last, security check, and they say, you have to go back and wait a while. You have to get a little cleaner. There's no loss. The question, specific question you're asking is, if we still maintain some attraction for sense gratification, then the devotion is destroyed. That's what you said. Not destroyed. You can't destroy whatever spiritual progress someone makes It can never be destroyed. Neither you nor somebody else nor a combination of the two can destroy it. Nor can you or somebody else or a combination of the two create it. It's created by mercy and your willing acceptance of that mercy, that combination. It awakens. And once it awakens, it's never destroyed. Permanently there. If you were to this evening walk out the door and never come back, please don't do that, but if that were to happen, never in this lifetime ever think of Krishna or speak Krishna or anything. No prasadam. Maybe a little prasadam. Anyway. Come back on Saturdays at around 7:45. Probably some people waiting out there. Even if there's no devotional service performed for the rest, guaranteed in your next lifetime, you would take a human birth and you would get another opportunity to continue devotional service. And were you to continue even a little bit, you would continue right from where you left off. Never lost. So we don't want to take advantage of that in the wrong way. Okay, I did my little bit, that's it. Now for the other part of love. But we should, knowing its permanence, we should make that investment. And continually build on that progress of devotional service. It's okay. Anybody else back there in the adjacent room behind the wall? Someone's coming, right? You have to invoke the voice from behind the wall to come. Go ahead.
And in the morning class, you were saying that Ganesha becomes sober. So
what has to do what?
Becomes sober.
So
Dira, sober. Dira, okay.
So, I mean, it starts all from the student-teacher relationship. In the
But training comes that way, yeah.
In the classical Vedic system, the student serves the teacher.
The student lives in the home of the teacher.
Yeah.
Apart from the parents, that's their new, it's like their surrogate parent. Only it's not the relationship of mother and father, it's the relationship of teacher and student. It's another dependent relationship, but a different kind of relationship. Much, much more reverential relationship.
So, then he understands like collecting wood and asking for alms, the bad nature of this world and the good nature of the another world, spiritual world. So all this realization he gets, and he gets sufficient place to follow instructions also, which he cannot really. So he gets faith in the teacher also through that process. So I was thinking that in today's culture, or like we are educating, getting education in our material world also. So there, these things doesn't come in the sense that education comes and it's all theoretical and we are, I mean, they don't have any practical relevance to life. You have to make up something and produce something, all lording over things only. Now here we have an opportunity to, something has been taught in medical style. So, I mean, I was just, it's obvious, but wondering that the training is, is that duty of the student is to, and we are not used to it, but we have to take the lessons of that about how the material world is bad and having faith and gratitude in the teacher.
Yeah.
And the good part of the spiritual world. All this, these are the lessons that we are supposed to accept from this training.
Yeah. Now, several, many bells are ringing just from, one is that when you teach a child, you have to teach a child in a way that a child can understand. I mean, no, simple. Very simple. Isn't it? You've had any dealings with children? You're trying to communicate with them. You have to keep it really simple. But they can understand real simple things. They can understand real simple things. It just... Is Sri Harsha here? He left. Sri Harsha was describing his son, Sankarshan, right? How his son asks questions, why, about everything. He won't follow unless he knows why. And when he knows why, he will follow. And he'll give the reason why every time he's following. He's building faith in his father, because he's the one that's telling me why. And then when he sees other people doing something other, he'll say to his father, as yet he's not said to them, this is nonsense. He says to his father, they're eating boga because they don't know that they should offer this to Krishna. If his father offers him something to eat, he'll ask, has this been offered to Krishna? It's been offered to Krishna. Okay, thank you. I witnessed it. I offered them some mahaprasadam. And I extended, to his son. And his son was completely just, I thought maybe he just doesn't know me and he's shy. And his father said, it's prasadam. And his hand went out like that. It's far out. So, you have to teach children in a simple way. Once they understand something in a simple way, then it becomes possible, as they mature, to take that simple understanding and apply it, if they've really understood it, in a more complex situation. If I may, I'll give another example. I'll try to keep it short, but you got me a little excited here. There's one devotee who watched one generation of children go through a Sunday school program. And as adults, the way that they were trained was the kids would come together on Sunday and the teacher would say, okay kids, today we're going to do this activity. And the kids were happy to do the activity. And then occasionally they'd have shloka memorization reciting. And the parents, oh, very good, very good. And then they sometimes had a drama, and the kids would recite the drama lines, and very nice, the parents were very happy. But when the kids grew up, and the teacher wasn't there, it's a holiday, a vacation. It's a break. So they're not practicing those same nice activities that they did when there was a supervising teacher there. I don't know if I explained this. Did I explain this here already? Huh? It's Subal. So then he and his wife decided, we want to take a different approach. We'd like to see the kids engage in that activity. We want the kids to understand why and that they want to do that activity. So that when we're not there in the classroom, doing this, they know the answer. Not just, well, my teacher told me so. Or my grandmother worshipped this way, that's why I do it. Which I get from a lot of people that are doing their studies abroad. They get challenged left and right and sideways by people who want to know, why do you do this? Why do you believe in that? And they don't know. But when they know, when it's internalized, so that's the core part of teaching is not just recitation, regurgitation, push the button and give the right answers back, but actually, internalizing the lessons. So children can learn in one way, and if that didn't take place, since most of those of you who are assembled here didn't get that same kind of training, rather, the teachers that you had, just like the teachers that I had in going to school, were information-oriented teachers, not character-building-oriented teachers. So you all know how to give the right answers when they push the button. You have the exam time, and you have so many minutes to answer the questions, and you know how to do it. That's why you're here. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You learned how to process that. But building character and understanding fundamental principles of character, well, no one really took the time to teach those things. So it's a little late, which makes it more difficult, but that's the principle. The same principle applies, and the training is a little different than going to get wood for Sunday Panimuni and collecting alms to be brought to the kitchen so Mataji can prepare and offer to the deity and to distribute to the Gurukul boys. A different principle. It's a different level of how that knowledge needs to be imparted. But the principle is the same. And there's a lot of competing factors at this stage, like other pressures from other sources to, you know, don't make sure you don't skip a beat with the regurgitation process of being able to produce the right answers on the exam so you can get that grade, so you can get that degree, so you can get that money, so you can get ahead materially in life. Enormous amount of pressure in that department. And not so much encouragement, reinforcement, and approval to go forward in the other. Character building, spiritual character building department. But that's the difficult task of the teacher. And as what I gather what you're saying is, a diligent student needs to understand, just like a very materialistic student will understand, the way you get ahead in the game is you do this. So I'm going to do this, and I'm going to not do anything else but this, because I just want to get ahead in the game. As the materialistic interested personality understands the way of the game, so a devotionally inclined person needs to understand, these are essential responsibilities that I have as a student. I need to develop this and this and this. And it's not easy because I got all these other pressures and I haven't had a lot of training. And like Prahlad is saying, you know, I have so many disqualifications. But I know that you're very merciful. And therefore, please place me in the care of Priyajana, those who are carrying your mercy. And I just want some training from them. And we're getting some understanding of the proper disposition. The one who is in training must have. As far as I understand it, your teacher here, Krishna Smarana Das, is encouraging you all not only do nicely in your academics, but excel in your academics. While that's part of your instruction, build your spiritual consciousness. That's another demanding part of your consciousness, of the instruction. And develop certain core qualities so that when you're no longer here under the direct care of the teacher, you'll be able to continue spiritually, as well as, you know, producing what you need to produce as far as the expectations of your material duties are concerned. In fact, do them excellently. Excel in them. Because I just had this discussion with Mahashringa, a devotee in Hyderabad before coming here. In the beginning, he's a grihastha, has two children, and a very successful man. But in the beginning stage of his devotional service, he was putting, as he described it, an inordinate emphasis on his devotional activity and was not sufficiently attentive to his material responsibilities. And as a result, due to certain sequence of events, he has businesses, two or three businesses. There was a very serious loss. And then he realized, I can't live like this. I'm not going to discontinue my devotional activity,
But I have to be very attentive to my material activity because people will judge the devotional side by the performance on the material side. So I have to get that perfectly in order. I have to excel, but for Krishna, not for other reasons. For Krishna reasons. For pleasing Krishna reasons. For representing Krishna nicely reasons. Otherwise, I can live in a very simple situation, but, you know, he's in a prominent social position. Where he's mixing with many, 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 many people. And they're judging his devotion on his material performance. He has to excel. That's his reward. He's earned the right to have that pressure. Because he's excelled so nicely in his spiritual life. Anyway. So you're getting similar training. You're not in that position yet, but you're getting the groundwork now so that you can perform accordingly. And then different students are going to have different learning capacity. As is always the case. Materially is the case, and spiritually it's also the case. But yes, there's responsibilities in the part of the teacher, there's responsibilities in the part of the student, and the combination of those two makes a very wonderful result. Lacking on one side or the other makes a less than wonderful result. I think I better stop. I just took a lot of time with that question. I have more to say, but 8 o'clock. Come tomorrow for the story of Narayana, disciple. The sequel to Prahlad Maharaj. Tomorrow evening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.